Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, one and all, for being here. Wherever you are, whenever you are, guys, you could be listening anywhere at your convenience, which is really cool. My guest tonight is the lovely Lisa Campion, who had an emergency last week, and we had to postpone this conversation. And we're going to have a lot of fun. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And yes, we have the election coming up in the United States. And I could talk a lot about that because it's pretty crazy. But what I want to talk about, which is even more crazy, is the chaos and violence that's going on at the Standing Rock Indian Reservation in North Dakota with the people of the Lakota Nation standing off against the hired police that are from the corporations that want to build the pipeline. And they were going to build the pipeline in another location and not run it through Indian land. But the white people, the wealthy white people in that area said, no, we don't want it there. It could do bad things for our water, which is exactly what the natives are saying. And so they rerouted it. And the United States has this really bizarre history of not only the genocide of Native people, which was how our country expanded, but then they gave them parcels, relatively small areas to live in that they called reservations. And this was done by treaty. And the treaties are like treaties with a foreign country because they consider these nations technically a foreign nation, even though they are within the boundaries of the United States. And there were several treaties in the 1800s that affected this particular area. One created an area that was native land but was not the reservation. And then there was a different one that created the actual reservation. So the place that the pipeline is going to run is just outside the actual reservation, but it runs through sacred land and burial sites. And they want to just run bulldozers through it and dig it up and, you know, put in a big oil pipeline. It's also going to go under the Missouri River, which is part of the huge river system that flows into the Mississippi River and provides the drinking water for millions and millions of people. So there are many, many levels to this. But basically what it gets down to is greedy people being violent to get the folks that are in the way of their making money out of the way. And this is in a real basic way the story of Western civilization playing out once again. And once again, the native people, as happens all over the world, are a small group of unarmed people standing against armed thugs that have been hired by billionaires to get them out of the way. You can't be in our way. We're going to do this. So basically, for those of you around the world that haven't heard of this, may I ask you to look into it and get some information and see the pictures. There's a lot of video. Some of it is very violent and bizarre. Like, why are they doing this? But I would love for you to include your prayers and your, especially prayers for protection and success to the Native people. And one of the things that's going on that has never happened before is that tribal members from all over the United States and Canada, thousands of tribes, have come down to be part of this encampment and this standoff. and people from as far away as New Zealand. There was a group of Maori, the native people of New Zealand, who came down and did a haka ceremony. And that was very powerful. Just there are people from all over coming down and saying, this is our fight. It just happens to be happening here. And so I ask you to participate in whatever way you can, praying, doing Ho'oponopono, whatever you can, to give energy to the struggle basically between the light and the dark, between the forces of greed and the people who are saying, this is sacred land and water is life, and you can't do this because you wouldn't run a pipeline through your own cemeteries and you wouldn't pour poison into your own water. Don't do it to us. So thank you for listening. This has definitely been a rant and more political than usual. But I wanted to make sure that everybody was aware of what's going on as we go into our election week, and that will take over everybody's consciousness. So many blessings and thank you. And let's have some fun with my lovely co-host, Lisa Campion. How you doing tonight, Lisa?
I'm doing really good. Thanks.
You're welcome. Yeah, you had a hard time last week and we couldn't do the show. And so the topic that we chose for tonight is really fascinating to me. It's what's called the thinning of the veil. And there are several ways that that's happening, but you want to give your understanding of it?
Yeah, sure. It's right around Halloween. It's sort of like one of the reasons why we celebrate Halloween, and Halloween was just a few days ago. From a psychic's perspective, when we talk about it, the veil is the veil that separates the living and the dead. So the world of the living and the world of the dead. And during this time of year, and that sort of peaks right around Halloween, that veil that separates our world from the other side gets very thin. And it allows for easy communication with spirits. It allows, like, so the day after Halloween is All Saints Day, All Souls Day, or the Day of the Dead. And it's like really common across traditions, across cultures and through time, that there's like an ability to speak to people that have passed over. Also, maybe more people pass over. You know, there may be some people that actually choose to leave during that time. And it's also, this thinning of the veil is very stimulating for psychics like us who mm-hmm. who just get, you know, really activated at this. It's like a lot of psychic and spiritual energy is available. And even people that don't have as much, even the muggles can see spirits, and often do at this time of year.
And most of the traditions that we see in the United States were brought over from the British Isles, actually, probably mostly from Ireland with the Irish immigration, and have bent and twisted in various ways over the hundreds of years since, so that people have kind of lost what the original story was, which was, yes, this is a time when it's likely that the ghosts will be noticeable, and they're going to be angry and after you, so you better do something. And the something was wearing costumes and making lamps that looked mean and ugly. You know, I think in Ireland they used long, skinny gourds because pumpkins were not a native fruit. But here we use pumpkins, which make a lot of room for carving and putting the lights inside it. And so the idea was that everybody was trying not to let anyone know who they really were. And what we wound up with is kids going around in disguises begging at people's doors for candy, which I guess is better than some of the things that have gone on over the hundreds of years of the tradition becoming what it is. So it's really fascinating how, rather than looking at it as, cool, I might see a ghost tonight, that'd be nice, to, oh my God, we're going to see ghosts and they're going to be angry, to nobody really having any idea what the story is at all, and making it all about candy and silly costumes.
And partying. And I have sort of like a side interest in the costumes that people pick, because I feel like it says a lot about our what's going on in our psyche, you know, like it's a, sort of an opportunity to enact a side of us that we fantasize about, or like an aspect of our shadow that we really, you know, would like to do, but we can't do that in our everyday life. But Halloween gives us like permission to sort of have fun with these shadow parts of ourselves that we normally don't get to play with.
Right. Well, there's this subculture called cosplay, yep. You know, costume play, where, you know, and some people who know nothing about that have seen folks that go to the conventions for Star Trek and other TV things and video games, and they dress up like the characters. And that's basically what Halloween is everybody has permission to do cosplay on the street. It's kind of odd. So
yeah, I think it's really fun, and I have fun with it myself too. And you know, like, just you get to be a serial killer for the day, you know, or whatever thing that you're choosing. I think that's quite interesting what people do.
And people do some very strange things. Even the kids' costumes are getting strange. Although I'm kind of out of all of that. I don't have a kid that age anymore, and I live in a place in the country where nobody's going to come to my door. They'll never find me. So I'm really not up close and personal and watching all that unfold anymore.
So,
but it's
in thinking, going back to our veil topic, you have such an interesting take on that. Like, you know, tell me more about your take on it.
Well, there is the whole element of this moment in the annual cycle being when the veil is thinnest between the physical world and whatever it is the place where the spirits are that isn't our physical world. In the monthly cycle, it's the full moon. In the daily cycle, it's early morning, which is why paranormal investigators tend to do their investigations between midnight and 2 or 3 a.m. So theoretically, the moment that would be the most likely to be able to cross the veil and see a ghost would be on Halloween. That's a full moon at 2 o'clock in the morning.
In the cemetery.
In the cemetery with the, you know, all the sounds of a creepy movie. This year it was a new moon, which has a different problem, which is everybody's out on the street and there's no light. But that's the idea behind it, is that there is a cycle that is going through all the time where it's easier or harder to run into a ghost. And, you know, one of my things is a friend's daughter saw a ghost in their old farmhouse and was kind of freaked out. And I said, no, wait a minute. Seeing a ghost is incredibly rare. It's a really special moment. Most people will never, ever get to see an apparition, a ghost that looks like they're standing there like a real person. It's just incredibly rare. And so instead of being all freaked out, celebrate, because it's so cool. How special is that?
Yeah.
And the mom was, you know, that's a good reframe. And I was like, no, that's real. Very few people are ever going to actually see an apparition. It's one of the rarest ghost phenomena for lots and lots of reason. So instead of people, you know, saying, gee, I wonder if something cool is going to happen, we've created all these stories about why we should be afraid, which I think is too bad. You know, so I'm always trying to debunk creepy and spooky, because to me, anything that's surprising, especially if it happens in the dark or when you're asleep or whatever, is going to be frightening. But other than that, don't add to it. Like, okay, this is a surprise. And now what am I seeing, and who is this, and what's the story, and all the rest of it? If you can step back from, oh, I got frightened because I'm surprised, and not add all of the movies and the TV shows and the spooky stories around the campfire and all of that stuff that have told us ghosts are scary. Like, no, they're not. They're just our ancestors.
I teach my psychic students once they get over the startle factor, that they should tune in with their intuition, you know, about how they actually, it's like sort of like the basics of discernment, you know, like what kind of spirit are you dealing with, and is it good or is it not good? Because right away, once you get over the startle and the surprise, you're going to be able to feel if it's good, neutral, or yucky. Kind of like we just do the same thing with people, right? I mean, somebody walks into the room and within 3 seconds, you've got good, neutral, or yucky. And I think we deal with spirits, or my way that I choose to do it is a lot the same way I deal with people. You know, if they're good, then it's probably, if you have a good feeling about it, it's probably a spirit guide or a helpful spirit, and you can decide what you want to do with it. Neutral, which most of them I think are, you can decide, like, you can, like, I don't really want to talk to you right now, you know, go away, I'm trying to sleep, whatever, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, back off, you know. And if it's yucky, then you kind of have to go into a different, you know, how do you handle a yucky spirit? And I usually start by asking them nicely, because sometimes that works. Like, you know, like if a random person banged on your door at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, and, you know, and then if that doesn't work, I get like, stop my foot, you know, point my finger, give them the bad dog voice, bad ghost, go out, you know, bad, you know.
Well, I think the most important thing, there was a point at which I was just reading all the experts that did clearing of ghosts that were attached to people, that did possession work, because people were showing up with that issue, and I knew a little bit about it, but I was like, well, there are people that have written about this. I should find out what the experts say. And the one thing that came up consistently all over the world, no matter what the tradition was, is that 80 to 90% of ghosts have no idea they're dead.
Right.
And that key piece of information, number one, they're just people.
Yeah.
They died, and, you know, it's like they missed the bus to home. You know, they were supposed to get on the bus to go home. They didn't go home. Now they're hanging out lost and confused.
Right.
And that's all it is. They're just, you know, they have whatever personality they had when they were alive. That doesn't change until you go to the other side and go through life review, go through the whole crossing over process. But so they can be anywhere on the wide range of personalities that people can have. They could be somebody who is totally withdrawn and never went out of their house and they're afraid of you. Who are you? Why are you here?
Yep.
And on the other end are very violent, aggressive people. Most people are somewhere in between. You know, it's just like everything else.
And I think they're like stuck in trauma too. Like a lot of times when I'm dealing with actual ghosts, they're, you know, so if you met like a super freaked out, traumatized alive person, you know, what would you do? That you would help them. You would calm them down. You would help them find their right butt, help them get on the bus. Right.
Right.
And I think that it's the same. So actually spirits and ghosts never really freaked me out that much, even when I was a kid, because I always knew that they were just people. And if you're not, you know, if you weren't afraid of Uncle Fred when he was alive, there's no reason to be afraid of Uncle Fred when he's dead. It's just right. like the same dude.
Right. Yeah, I did have a moment in time when I had to get a ghost out of a room so a patient in the hospital could get to sleep. And I was having this very strange conversation with the ghost, and that when I realized he had no idea what was going on. And I finally just said, "Do you know you're dead?" And he stopped and got a really funny look on his face and said, "Oh, that explains so much."
Yeah. I know, all the poor things. And hospitals, I think, you know, hospitals are really, with all the life-saving and life-prolonging equipment that's in hospitals, really mm-hmm. interrupts the natural process of dying.
Right.
You know, so that's when they missed the bus, because they were supposed to die, but they couldn't because they're hooked up to all this machinery, and now their body's alive, but they're out of their body. Then when the body goes, they don't know how to, they missed their window in a way.
Right, right. The window is 3 or 4 days.
And hospitals are so full of those ones. There should be somebody like you on staff in every hospital, like just moving them along.
Well, I work remotely, so they could just hire me and I would
I think they
clean
should.
It up I'll, periodically.
I'm gonna call them all and talk to them. We got to get that happening.
Thanks. Okay. It's also why people will be sitting in the waiting room and we'll go home with a hitchhiker.
Yeah.
Oh, you feel good? I don't want to be alone. Can I go with you?
Yeah.
But a lot of them, you know, a lot of people die suddenly and don't have a moment when they realize they died. A lot of people die either in surgery with anesthesia or with recreational drugs or any other kind of drug, and they're out of their body and they don't have any idea their body died. There are many, many ways that somebody can die and not notice, which sounds really weird.
They're basically because they're in shock.
Right.
You know, they're like shocked or traumatized, you know,
right.
or on
and
drugs.
Then there
or...
And then there are ghosts that do know. And they have some really strange stories about why they don't want to leave. but that's
mostly it's because they're Catholic and they don't want to go to hell, you know, or they were naughty in this life and, you know, they're afraid. I think afraid, and it's not just Catholics. I'm just kind of kidding, but I do meet an awful lot of Catholic ghosts more than your fair share, you'd think. But I think they're like fearful of, if you're fearful of what's going to happen on the, when you cross over, you might not want to go.
Right. Right. And especially if you know exactly what your transgression was and exactly how you're going to be punished.
Yeah.
If you have the whole story very concrete, mm-hmm. The level of fear is very high and you just stay earthbound. Right. I'm not going there. Bad things are happening to me. It's really, the whole process is really fascinating, and it's one of the reasons that the whole spookiness and, you know, oh my God, something's going to happen here. Even the reality TV shows where they're creating high drama, it doesn't make any sense to me. We need exactly the opposite. We need to realize that ghosts are just people. Their bodies died. They didn't get to go home, and they're really confused and lost, maybe doing stupid stuff, but that's because they're confused and lost, and what we need to do is help them. So that's the direction that I go in all my conversations. I have a talk that I've been doing for years that's called "Is Everything You Know About Ghosts Dead Wrong?"
Yeah.
Because most of what people have heard about ghosts is just wrong.
Right. Yeah, I have had a young girl in one of my intro psychic classes, and she was real confused about spirit guides versus ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to tell her, like, ghosts don't make good spirit guides. Like, they're not going to guide. They're not like angels or beings that are going to guide you. They're like the crazy, like, homeless person you meet on the side of the road. Like, they're like that, you know. You don't listen to that person maybe for advice. And she, you know, of course she was using the Ouija board. And she, you know, she really had to understand that we're here to help them. They don't really make great helpers. Now, once they cross over, and like you said, they're kind of back in the fullness of their being, they've completed that process, they often come back to us in a different way, but that's not a ghost.
Right.
It's not a stuck earthbound spirit.
Yeah, the Cherokee medicine man that was my wonderful mentor, the Kiowa, used to say, you know, just because you're dead doesn't make you smart.
Right.
So everybody was channeling. He was like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who are you talking to?
I know. Yeah.
You know, just because it's coming from a non-physical source does not mean that it's a reputable source or somebody that has any insight.
Yeah.
This stuff is, after a while, after the specialness and everything falls away, it's really pretty funny. We're going to need to go to our break. We will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. My guest is the wonderful Lisa Campion, and we're going to talk more about the thinning of the veil. This is David Franklin Farkas on the Farkas Files. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Empower Radio, an entire radio station devoted to your personal development, expanding your conscious awareness, and empowering positive change. Meet our hosts and listen online at EmpowerRadio.com, on iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher Radio, or iTunes, or download the Empower Radio app for your smartphone or tablet. It's free in the App Store, and it lets you listen to our shows and podcasts on demand. Empowering people, empowering change. Empower Radio, online at EmpowerRadio.com.
This is why you work so hard to pay the mortgage. Because home is more than four walls and a roof. It's that porch swing on a summer night. It's pajamas with feet and everybody over for Sunday dinner. And that old stuffed chair in the living room you just can't get rid of. This is why you work a second job. This is why you learn to fix things yourself so you can save on repairs. Because home is your place, your memories, your family sleeping in their own beds at night. And that is why we want to help. We are Making Home Affordable, a free government resource that can make paying the mortgage easier. And now even more options are available. Call 888-995-HOPE today. That's 888-995-HOPE. Or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Good night, Mama.
This is why. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
If a disaster struck right now, what would you and your family do first? Would you stay where you are or leave? What if you and your family were separated? Would your kids know what to do? How would you get in touch with them if your cell phone isn't working or the subways aren't running? Don't wait until a disaster strikes to figure it out. It's your responsibility to make a plan for you and your family ahead of time. To learn how, take our readiness challenge at nyc.gov/readynewyork or call 311 for information. In this online tool, you'll be faced with real-life challenges forcing you to make quick decisions at every turn to teach you the importance of being prepared for a disaster. Without a plan, it's like you're putting your family in a disaster. Visit nyc.gov/readynewyork or call 311 for information. A public service announcement brought to you by the New York City Office of Emergency Management and the Ad Council.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I don't know how to talk like a parent. Don't make me come back there. You see what I mean? It's pretty awful. Try it again. Don't make me come back there. Now that's pretty good. That one kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my wonderful co-host, Lisa Campion. And we're talking about this idea of the thinning of the veil. that the separation between the physical world and whatever, wherever ghosts and spirits are, which is sort of not the physical world, but sort of is. There are many, many theories about how that might work. But that separation is at certain times of the month and certain times of the year thinner. And you could run into a ghost randomly just because that moment is like that. So, we've kicked this around a number of times, Lisa, and it's always fun. So your experience is different from mine. But we started talking about another meaning for that comes out as the veil is thinning or the veil is lifting.
Yeah, that's super cool. Yeah, tell me more about that. That was really interesting what you said.
Yeah, everybody knows the word apocalypse, and it's one of those words that's, ooh, it's really bad. Everything's going to go. No, that's not what it means. Apocalypse is a word in Greek which translates either as the veil will be lifted or it will be revealed. That's why the book in the Bible is called Revelations. Although, to me, Revelations is kind of a psychotic dream. I don't know. But the point is that at a certain point in historic time, that all the things that have been hidden will start to be unhidden, more obvious. So we live in this period of time that seems like total chaos, which should be expected because the traditions all over the world say that this is a transition from a period of thousands of years of darkness to a period of light that we don't even understand. We don't know what it's going to be like yet.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Like if you use that definition of what will be revealed, I mean, don't you kind of have a sense that that's what's going on? Like if you even read the news or what's happening is like all of the corruption that's like underground is like popping out to be looked at.
Right.
And it seems horrifying, but it's really just like cleaning out what was always under your bed all the time anyway.
Right. It's basically there is so much light on the planet now that there are no shadows to hide in anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in a big city and saw a lot of the stuff that other people might not have seen. You know, I actually met some high-level mafia people. I've seen some pretty strange stuff in the city. And so it doesn't surprise me that corruption and greed have created all kinds of strange, violent things in the world. But for most people, they think the world works like it says in the textbooks, and it really doesn't. So when that stuff is revealed, it's like, oh, my God, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. Oh, like, no, it's always been this way. You're just seeing it now.
Well, I had this sort of a similar thought. Actually, it's so funny we're on the same wavelength. But this morning I had this kind of thought about maybe the world is making this shift from like Newtonian thinking to quantum thinking, you know, and most of the world lives in this sort of Newtonian ideal, which is like A plus B equals C, and what you see is what you get, and that's what's happening on the surface is, or I think of it as like TV land, you know, like what the agreed upon reality of the masses, right? And that there's always been people who are the quantum people that see it's a particle and a wave, you know, or that see the holographic view of the universe rather than the flat linear two-dimensional cause and effect view of the universe. And that when you start making the shift to quantum, the Newtonian world sort of earthquakes or something, you know, like it's not.
Well, and that's, you know, it's also fascinating that it's not so much Newtonian versus quantum, but relativity versus quantum has never been resolved.
Right.
You know, that the way that large things in the universe function and the way that extremely small things function have different sets of rules. and the rules of the quantum world are much more the rules of all of the spiritual and healing traditions. We've tapped into that understanding before science had a definition for it. But for most people, it's Newtonian physics. You know, it's like a game of pool. If you hit this ball and it hits that ball, it goes into this hole, and right, everything is pretty straightforward. And what we're seeing now is what we used to call the hairy underbelly. From my perspective, it starts in the unseen, that there is a darkness that wants bad things to happen on the planet and finds people that it can work with to make that happen. And it's a hierarchy. So to me, it's all organized crime. Hmm. Anything that's causing pain and violence and struggle in the world is a form of organized crime.
Yeah.
And it's about greed and it's about slavery. So, yeah, you know, addictions are a form of slavery. You give up part of your life to get the money to then take the drug or smoke the cigarette or whatever it happens to be. And then it takes another part of your life in terms of taking you away from everything else and making you sick. And you can't get out of it.
Well, so, I totally feel you, you know, and I sort of feel like our planet is set up around these polarities, you know, the duality of light and shadow, good and evil, whatever you want to, Patriots and the Jets, like however you want to put it, you know, and then we are in the middle with free will, you know, and that this, so I can sort of fall back on my ability to choose as the sort of superpower that all of humanity is given, even though it's kind of crazy down here, you know?
That's true, but there is a lot working towards conformity rather than creativity, and doing what one is told, the way you're supposed to, in quotation marks, do things, rather than being creative and creating your own way in the world.
And that can be like part of the lifting of the veil too, though.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, when the veil lifts, like you're not, like Don Miguel Ruiz talks about being domesticated, you know, mm-hmm. like when you talk about conformity, you know, and when the veil lifts, you go into another level of consciousness. Well, I don't have to do that. I can choose to be another way. I can choose to, like what you were talking about in your musing today, I can choose to support the, you know, struggle for water and human dignity and to honor our treaties and all of those things. Like, we can make choices. And when we do make choices, we throw our energy towards the light, you know, and maybe then the veil continues to lift.
Right. You know, one of the jokes that gets thrown around is that the hippies had it right. You know, peace and love, man. Peace and love.
God bless my hippie parents. My parents are hippies. I love that they were.
No, yeah, mine were more old world European, but certainly politically eccentric. it was very amusing to me in that era that my dad liked the same folk music that I liked.
It's funny.
He actually liked cowboy music, which was even funnier.
Wow. That's kind of funny for like an old world guy from Brooklyn, right?
Well, he had, but there was something called the Civilian Conservation Corps during FDR's attempts to get us out of the Depression. And city kids were taken to basically build the national parks. So he was a lumberjack out west.
Wow. And that's where he got to like the.
Well, and then, right. And then he was a hobo. He did all kinds of things. He had a period in his life when he was just out there doing all that stuff that the songs are about. And when he was out west, he picked up this love of cowboy songs, which I just thought was hysterically funny, but he loved loved folk music. He loved blues and all the rest of it. And so we're, you know, two generations enjoying exactly the same music is not supposed to happen. And we were having a good time with it.
Aw, that's sweet.
Yep.
So what do you think we can do? Like what, like in the midst of all this chaos, in the midst of all of this upheaval and the veil lifting, like what can we do to steady ourselves, to make our way through this time?
The basics remain the same all the time. One of them is grounding. And our producer is cracking a joke in the background saying drink a lot. And that's right. Hydrate yourself. Because all of
I don't think that's what he meant.
I don't think it is. But we got him. Dehydration is a very big problem, especially with all the changes in the sun. That's throwing more energy at the planet, and dehydration makes everything else worse in your body, including making it harder to think straight and screwing up your emotions and all the rest of it. But grounding and whatever form of meditation or prayer allows you to stay in a quiet place for some period of your day and look at things differently.
I think so too. Like self-care, you know, I don't know about you, but like a lot of times, like when we go under stress, like self-care is the thing that you drop. And right. I think it's the more stressful the situation, the more chaos there is, the more actually we need to lean into our routines that support us, like eating well and, you know, exercising, going, meditating, just like whatever you're taking your walks in the woods or whatever your normal self-care routine is. I think it's, we have to hold on to those rather than let them go.
Right. Right. And part of the problem in our culture is there are not that many people that have created those things for themselves. You know, we like to think that everybody's going to the gym and everybody's eating well and all of it. That's really an expanding subculture, but still a subculture.
Yeah.
Lots of people are still going to their job every day, eating fast food along the way, not having any time, you know, constantly being either on the phone or watching TV. And there isn't a moment to be quiet. There isn't a moment that you will allow yourself that deep relaxation. And the other thing is, getting back to the joke, if you drink or you do a lot of other things that are dehydrating at a time when the planet is dehydrating you, it makes it a double whammy,
right,
in terms of the load on your body.
Yeah.
So it's really pay attention and take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And also realize that in every generation, there's been some crisis that everybody thought was the end of the world, and somehow we're still here.
Right. That it, like, faith to me is a really, like, I'm a person that has a lot of faith, and I'm not even sure I'm not particularly religious, but I'm, you know, my vision of faith or my experience of faith has changed a lot over my life, but somehow it sort of feels like a belief that it's going to be okay, even though I don't know how that's going to happen, or that what's happening is part of this bigger pattern.
Right.
That, you know, I can't see why it is, like, you know, all these things coming to the surface, it's going to be better in the long run.
Well, the other thing that's going on, when we talk about self-care, and part of self-care is what you put into your mind.
Right.
So if you're watching the news, which is a form of propaganda and is designed specifically to have an effect on your brain, the way they do the images, the way they say the words, all of that stuff is very precisely done to basically freak people out. And, you know, the new, there are two things that will basically turn your brain off. And one of them is fear and the other is sexual stimulation. The news is about fear and the commercials are about sexual stimulation. And the news is about getting you to buy stuff for the on the commercials. It's that direct. So if
I don't watch the news anymore.
Right. I can't watch it. I get nervous immediately. Yeah. So if you watch mainstream news and you watch most TV shows that are demonstrating bad behavior and you watch movies that are all about fear and people hurting each other, that's what's going into your brain. And your brain can't separate something that is just an image, especially if it's an all-encompassing image that's audio and video, and which is why movies are so powerful.
And has a strong feeling associated with it, too.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
And so your brain takes that in as a real event. And you start thinking differently, and your body starts getting sick based on things that don't even exist.
And I think that stuff like numbs us to life in a way, like, mm-hmm. or numbs, like you just get used to it and then it feels normal. And then when it happens in the world, you're like, oh yeah, that I saw that happen in a movie, you know?
Right.
So I know it's really good. It's good to do, I think, every once in a while, like a media fast, like get unplugged if you can, get away from your phone. And
Right. Great unplug. Idea.
Yeah.
Or if you're binge watching, watch stuff that is interesting and uplifting. And, you know, to me, a lot of that for me is Star Trek, which was a show about accepting other species all over the universe and not doing bad things to them.
And not killing them.
Right. Not killing them and trying to figure out a way to make it work over and over again.
You know what's so funny about me is that I find one of the most relaxing things is science. Mm-hmm. I like science documentaries and shows about, I like Nova, I like, you know, like Cosmos and shows like that, because especially as a psychic, I spend a lot of my world and a lot of my time in like up in the ethereal realm and dealing with things that I can't put my fingers on, you know? And So for me, science is so relaxing and usually uplifting in a way.
Yep. Because it's explaining how the world works. It makes things make sense. The other thing is music and the music that you choose.
Yeah.
You know, people that listen to certain kinds of rock, especially heavy metal, have changes in their physiology based on the rhythms and the words. And, you know, some rap music is very violent. Some metal music is very violent. And they'll listen to it all the time and then be repeating the lyrics over and over again, like a mantra.
Mm-hmm. Like a mantra, yeah.
Yeah. So what you're creating is a world in which those ideas are true.
Mm. Yep.
Gets back to the choose wisely.
Yeah. I know that I think they did a study a while ago. It's such an interesting one. It's kind of old, but I think it's cool, where they had plants growing with different kinds of music. So plants mm-hmm. with no music, plants with like death metal, plants with like classical music. And they found that the classical music was the biggest growth factor, better than none, and better than death metal was the worst, you know?
Right.
And they found things like actually Bach and Mozart and there were very particular composers that had the biggest growth.
Right. So they were plugged into rhythms and harmonies that were very important.
Yeah.
But also the work of Dr. Emoto, who looked at the effects of different thoughts and different kinds of music on water. And he did that by flash freezing crystals and seeing what the shape was.
So cool.
And yeah. So if you say, I love you to a glass of water, and then take a sample of it and do this flash freezing process, it will get a very beautiful flower-like shape. And if you say, I hate you, I want you to die, or you play death metal to it, it comes out this distorted, really ugly shape in the crystal. So even at that level of something that we don't think has consciousness and shouldn't be affected is being affected everywhere. And it gets back to the water issue. What that water is picking up the thoughts of everybody it passes by. And then it goes back in the ocean and it goes back up and gets recycled through the clouds. It comes down as rain and just keeps going. And what are we putting, what thoughts are we infusing the water with?
And we're mostly water.
And we're mostly water, and we drink a lot of water, and the, you know, the brain's like 80% water. So, and there are people that have done ceremonies blessing water at a place that was profoundly polluted, and then they tested it afterwards, and the shapes of the crystals changed dramatically, and the pollution was reduced. So we can,
and our planet's mostly water. Like the whole thing. The
whole thing, which is why life is possible. Which gets us back to Standing Rock and that stuff, because basically what the Indians are saying is water is life. You can't do this. If you pollute this river, it's going to pollute most of the United States. Don't do this.
I love it that you talked to you about the Ho'oponopono. Because that's one of my go-to practices when I feel hopeless, or I feel like, what can one little person do in the face of all this craziness? I love that old, that Hawaiian prayer. It really helps me so much.
Absolutely. And we can tell people about it right now. It's just four simple statements. You want to do them?
Yeah, I don't know if I remember them in the right order, but what I remember is, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you.
Yep.
And that when you pray that way, and you can pray that way to yourself, to the planet, to the people you hate, people you don't like, you know, I find it particularly effective in working that prayer with somebody that I'm having a conflict with, or right. where there's disharmony in the relationship, or I'm feeling lack of forgiveness, I'm upset about it. I'll do that prayer, and I find that it changes the relationship with that person on the ground, even though they don't know that you're doing that.
Right. Right. Because you're changing yourself.
Yeah.
When you change yourself, you change the reality that you experience. So yeah, it's profound. So what a wonderful conversation. And of course, as always, we could keep going, but we're running out of time. My guest this evening is my lovely co-host, Lisa Campion, and you have your own show on Empower Radio now.
I do. Come and check me out. It's The Miracle of Healing, and I air on Tuesday at 2:00 Eastern Time.
Fantastic. And somebody they'll recognize got interviewed. Recently.
Yes, you did. You were my third guest. It was
great.
Thank you.
Great fun. Lisa, thank you so much for being on the show. It's always a fantastic evening having you here.
Thanks, honey.
And if you guys got curious about who is this guy David and what in the world does he do, you can go to househealing.com, and hiding in plain viewers. Every conceivable technology to get in touch with me, including a link to schedule a 20-minute free phone conversation. And we can look at what's going on with a person, place, situation, business, whatever, and see if my work might be helpful. If you want more information about the show, go to thefarkasfiles.com. The whole archive of the last 5 years of shows is there. And also, you can use the Empower Radio app, which lets you really easily and quickly plug into all of the shows on Empower Radio. And you can see the whole archive for every show and listen at your convenience. You can also listen on iTunes, podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and pretty much any other streaming media source. We're everywhere. Just search for Empower Radio or search for the Farkas Files and you'll be able to find it. And thank you so much for listening, because First of all, I'd feel silly if nobody was listening. But that's the whole point to doing these shows is you and what you get out of it. So I'm very happy that you're there, and I hope that it's beneficial. So thank you one and all for being here. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week. We'll be right back.